Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The White House says it's still alive and kicking, but the public option for government-run insurance in a health care reform package has seemed pretty lonely in the past few days, as the president appeared maybe to be dropping his commitment in the heat of the health care battle. Conservatives tar the public option as the path to socialized medicine. Supporters see it as crucial to breaking out of the health care mess we're in. This hour, On Point, we'll talk with public option champion Howard Dean about why it matters, and with others who say it may be time to let it go. You can join the conversation. Can we have real health care reform without a public option? Are you fighting for it? Against it. You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Earlier in the summer, there was no question. Here's President Obama in June at a gathering of the AMA saying a public option is necessary to health care reform.
I believe one of these options needs to be a public option that will give people a broader range of choices and inject competition into the health care market so that we can force waste out of the system and keep the insurance companies honest.
Got to have a public option. Over the weekend, Grand Junction, Colorado, Saturday, President Obama said the public option was just one small part of his plan for health care reform.
The public option, whether we have it or we don't have it, is not the entirety of health care reform. This is just one sliver of it, one aspect of it. And by the way, it's both the right and the left that have become so fixated on this that they forget everything else.
Whether we have it or we don't have it, just one sliver. And here's Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius on CNN Sunday on State of the Union, saying the option was not essential to health care reform.
He continues to be very supportive of some options for consumers. What we don't know is exactly what the Senate Finance Committee is likely to come up with. They've been more focused on a co-op, not-for-profit co-op as a competitor as opposed to a straight government-run program. And I think what's important is choice and competition. And I'm convinced at the end of the day the plan will have both of those. But that is not the essential element.
Not the essential element. Joining me now from Burlington, Vermont is Howard Dean. He's former presidential contender, governor of Vermont, and until January this year, chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He's also a physician, a big voice in the health care debate, and a big supporter of the public option. His new book is Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Health Care Reform, How We Can Achieve Affordable Medical Care for Every American and Make Our Jobs Safer. Howard Dean, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me on.
How do you read it? You know politics, you know policy. Is this thing headed down the river? Is it still alive? What's happening?
It's not only essential for real reform, it's also essential for passing the bill. This bill will not pass without a public option in it. And there's a reason for that. The truth is that you do need a public option. The president was right when he said that in June, and here's why. A public option is essentially the ability of people under 65 to sign up for things like Medicare or the VA. Now, they're obviously not going to sign up for the Veterans Administration health benefits, but they can sign up for something like Medicare. It's a very good program. 4% of the dollars in Medicare are spent on overhead. The rest goes to health care. In the private insurance world, the best companies do about 20% on overhead, and some significantly more than that. So if you want, you can't be denied care in the public option. You can't lose your care once you have it in the public option. You can take it anywhere in America. You don't get kicked off the insurance if you have a disease. They charge the same for everybody, whether you are have a good health record or a bad health record. This is a great health insurance program, and it needs to be, and the American people need to be able to choose that. If they want to keep their insurance, that's fine. A lot of people like their insurance, especially those who are getting it through the big corporations. But people need a choice, and I think the Congress needs to give the American people the choice and not use it themselves because of all that money they're getting from the health insurance industry.
So how do you read this wobble, if that's what it is, Howard Dean? I mean, the White House is saying Sebelius misspoke and, you know, nothing's changed, but yet something clearly has changed in the atmosphere. A gap has opened up here in the White House embrace of this. Why?
Well, of course, it's impossible to know without being in the White House, and I'm not in the White House. But I would guess—
They're watching Congress. So are you, I guess.
Well, no. I think they, frankly, this is a last gasp effort to unveil the Republicans' real lack of interest in this. And they succeeded in that. They said, OK, we'll give up the public option. Will you support the bill? And Charles Grassley said no. So they're not going to have a bill with a single Republican vote, maybe one or two. It's hardly worth making the political compromise to give up the public option in order to destroy the policy. And that, I think, they have now understood, that they cannot have real health care reform with Republican votes, because the Republicans aren't going to vote for this bill no matter what. The vast majority of Republicans in both House and Senate have decided that they're more interested in hurting Obama's presidency than they are in having health care reform.
Howard Dean,
and they now know that. They now know that because Charles Grassley has told us that, along with Jim DeMint a few weeks ago. And now they have to go back to the drawing board.
So maybe it's a strategy of pulling back the covers. But here's North Dakota Senator, Democrat, Kent Conrad. You say it can't pass without public option. Listen with me. He says here it can't pass with the public option.
The fact of the matter is there are not the votes in the United States Senate for the public option. There never have been. So to continue to chase that rabbit, I think, is just a wasted effort.
Howard Dean, how do you interpret what Senator Conrad, Democrat, is saying there?
Well, first of all, I consider Kent Conrad a very good friend. I like him a lot. And, well, you know, far be it from me to disagree with him about the vote count in the United States Senate, but I think it will pass, and I think it will pass ultimately the United States Senate with a public option, and here's why. If you have no health insurance reform, there's not any question that we're going to lose a huge number of seats in 2010 and that the president's reelection will be jeopardized. Because the Republicans aren't going to play in this at all, the majority of people who are going to vote for this support the public option. So if there are 42 or 43 senators who support the public option right now that are Democrats, the other, if it's really that low, the other 17 Democrats have a choice of deciding to support the president's bill or sending their own majority into putting their own majority in jeopardy, the House majority in jeopardy, and ultimately the White House in jeopardy. And I don't think they're going to do that.
You know, the opponents of this, conservative opponents, if you take them at the word, are saying this is a kind of Trojan horse for socialized medicine. But others are saying, even if whatever it is, you don't need it. You can have cooperatives. You can have co-ops that, like credit unions, bring individuals together, bundle their buying power, offer them the same kind of thing that a public option might, and you're off to the races without it.
The problem is we've already tried it. Blue Cross was such a co-op. They had public board members. They were a nonprofit, and they got eaten alive by the for-profit health insurance industry. Most of the Blue Cross outfits in this country now are, in fact, private health insurance companies, and they treat their patients just the way the private health insurance industry treats their patients, and they treat doctors just the way the private health insurance industry treats doctors. There is no difference between what was once something like a co-op and the private insurance agency. There's no evidence that co-ops work. Even the people who are conservative, some of the I have a lot of respect for Douglas Eakin Holtz, who was the head of
John McCain's economic advisor.
Yes, and George Bush's OMB guy, yep. And he was on the council. He doesn't think co-ops are worth anything either. I don't. I think that's a political compromise, not a policy compromise, and I don't think it's going to work, and nor do I think it's going to pass.
You've seen the town hall meetings and all that rumpus. Even at President Obama's relatively sedate town hall meetings, this has come up repeatedly, people saying, isn't this eventually going to kill private health insurance in this country if you get the government in the insurance business? What do you say to that?
Well, if you look, first of all, this stuff about socialized medicine makes me laugh, especially the people who are on Medicare and say, keep the government's hands off my health care.
Right. They're benefiting from it every day.
It's a huge government program. There are three huge beneficiaries from government health care. One is everybody over 65. The other is people in the Veterans Affairs health care system. And the third are people, members of Congress who have socialized medicine themselves. If all those people who are screaming and yelling about socialized medicine get sick, they're going to end up in Walter Reed Hospital, which is government run. Mm. So this is a ridiculous debate, and I think most of the American people aren't put off very much by it. Look, what you're seeing at the town hall meetings is genuine anger, but it's anger about a lot of things. I would venture to guess that 95% of them did not vote for Barack Obama, that are not the ones that are coming to the meetings, but the ones that are yelling and carrying on. I believe that they are a generation that now feels themselves being pushed out by the under 35s who elected President Obama. Don't forget, more people for the first time in my lifetime, more people voted who are under 35 than voted over 65. I believe that they are feeling increasingly frustrated because they're the shrinking but very vitriolic base of the Republican Party, which is not in power. And I think they're very angry because they're in this horrible recession, which they didn't cause, and they feel powerless because of it. And so I understand the anger, and I understand the ability of the Republicans to organize the anger because they've been very good at that for years. Karl Rove used to talk about polling for anger points and finding them, and of course driving people to the polls with that anger. But I don't think that's a representative of where Americans are on this issue.
You've said no public option, no reform. That's not what President Obama and Kathleen Sebelius have been saying in the last
Well, there's a difference between insurance reform and health care reform. There is insurance reform in this bill, which was worth doing. About 15 years ago, or a little bit more than that, when I was governor in Vermont, we did guaranteed issue and community rating. That is, we told the insurance companies if they wanted to sell insurance in Vermont, they couldn't deny anybody coverage. They couldn't kick anybody off their coverage. And they couldn't charge anybody 20% more than they charged their cheapest patient. Now, a lot of insurance companies did leave, which, of course, improved things markedly in Vermont because we don't have some of those anti-consumer practices that the insurance companies use here. Now, that's in the federal bill. That would be worth passing, but that's not health care reform. It's health insurance reform, and the difference is you won't get many more people insured because of it, and you won't save any money because of it. So, you know, the only way you're going to control costs, in fact, is to have a public option. Medicare's costs are a lot lower than the private sector's, and that's what you're going to have to let people sign up for if they want to, if you want to reform health care.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about health care reform and the public option for insurance in trouble, it would seem. We've been joined in this hour by former presidential contender and chairman of the Democratic National Committee until January of this year, Howard Dean, with us from Burlington, Vermont. His new book is Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. He says there's no true reform without it. Joining us right now from Washington is Len Nichols, healthcare economist, policy analyst, director of healthcare policy program at the New America Foundation. Len Nichols, thanks very much for being here.
Good to be here, Tom.
You hear what Howard Dean has to say, no public option, no real reform. You yourself were saying earlier this year, I'm looking at a roundtable in April where you said the need in the short run is very real, it has to be taken very seriously. But as I understand it, you're open to some kind of compromise now, maybe go to co-ops. How do you see it, Lynn?
Well, Tom, I lived through the Clinton debate in 93-94 at OMB, part of the team trying to make it happen. And I saw us fail as a nation. The Democrats had the House, they had the Senate, they had an ambitious young president we thought was great at communicating back then. Remember, he can talk to Bubba. And we failed. And failing basically led to 15 years in the wilderness where roughly, according to the Institute of Medicine, 20,000 people die every year because they don't have access to timely care, which they would have had they had normal, not Cadillac or Lexus, but normal health insurance. So I am very focused on doing what we can as quickly as possible to do two things, make health care affordable for all Americans, and I emphasize the word all, it's got to be all, and second, we've got to make the system sustainable over time. And what I would say is that the public option is certainly an option that can add value, and you know I've written about it and be glad to talk about the details, but I don't think it's a first order issue. It's not the thing on which I would fall on my sword, and I would urge my colleagues, including Governor Dean and all those who are understandably upset at the way this debate is going. The town halls are ugly, but democracy is complicated, and I do think the rising tide of the middle opinion is coming back, and I think we will have a chance at a reasoned debate in the fall. So I think we should put this stuff in perspective. It can be useful. It is not an essential.
Not an essential. So you're lined up with Kathleen Sebelius there. You say, with what I'm hearing you say is that without some compromise, an outright failure may be there. But Howard Dean says, he'll speak for himself, but that this would be a failure, that it would, if you don't have the public option, you don't have real reform. What do you say to that, Lynn?
Well, I would say first, and I think the governor would agree, that what we have in the bills now, and what there's unanimous consent on in both parties, frankly, but certainly among the Democrats who are going to support this, regulation of insurance is extremely important. The industry itself has caved on many issues they fought us on in 94. And so they know they've got to stop discrimination based on health. They know we're going to create new marketplaces for people who don't have good options today. The whole point is to give everyone, every American, access to the same efficiencies of economies of scale and risk pooling that big firms are able to give their workers. So people who don't have an offer or people who work for a small firm should have a new marketplace. It's highly regulated. There've got to be serious subsidies, and that's where I'm really worried about affordability. We've got to make this stuff affordable for people. And then in the long run, we've got to make our system more efficient. The public option could be a very useful device. I would say in some markets, it's not necessary in Seattle or Denver where markets work well. Sounds like it may not be all that much added value in Vermont, but it would be huge value added in some markets where a single insurer or a few insurers dominate and there's no real competition. But I would say regulation and subsidies and making the system more efficient over time could be at least as valuable, and maybe in the long run more valuable. The real debate, in my view, and I'd love to get the governor to engage on this, is over how we should do cost control, how we should do cost growth control, how do we make our system sustainable. A lot of good people, and I put the governor in that group, believe that the public option is the best way, and maybe in some cases they believe it is the only way to be effective in buying healthcare smarter and transforming our system. I would submit that there's an alternative path, and that is using some experiments in the Medicare program, which we have done before in the past, that can be catalytic. If we change incentives there, we can change incentives throughout the system. And in the long run, it is changing incentives that are far more important than the level of price that we pay a particular provider on a given day.
Lynn Nichols, stand by. I want to get Howard Dean on that. Let me get just a couple of callers here first, Governor Dean, and then we'll come straight to you. First to Omaha, Nebraska, and Diane. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I happen to agree with Dr. Dean about the Blue Cross and Blue Shield co-op experiment. It hasn't worked. I think one of the most interesting ways to approach this might be to think of healthcare not as a commodity. We have health insurance companies and healthcare providers that are publicly traded companies, and their first incentive is to provide revenues for their shareholders, not for their policyholders or their patients. And I think that making sure that all health insurers are nonprofit and health providers are nonprofit, including doctors' clinics and that sort of thing, and to make sure that pharmaceuticals aren't marketed to the general public would bring down healthcare costs enormously.
But that's more than is on the table in the immediate term, Diane. What about the public option? Do you think we need
public
it? Or
public option is the only thing that's on the table right now that will bring down healthcare costs.
Let me get one more and go to Howard Dean, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Erin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't think the public option is a feasible option. I think that from an economic perspective, what has to be looked at is when you look at, quote-unquote, you know, public options, everyone wants to tout Medicare as being a government-run program, and I think that you have to look at it from a provider perspective. I mean, physicians cannot sustain practices from what governments reimburse for Medicare services. They lose money on office visits, on procedures, on just merely injections. The problem that you run into and what everybody wants a public option, and everybody talks about cost controls. Let's take South Carolina. 22% of the population in South Carolina is on Medicaid. Now, the state is now actually going to what they call managed care Medicaid. They are basically trying to incentivize people or encourage people that are on Medicaid to enroll in what they call these Healthy Choices plans,
right,
which are actually now private companies to better manage the cost, because the problem that you run into is compliance. Okay, let's offer everyone this government-run public option. Okay, that doesn't mean that these patients aren't going to drive up health care. If you look at the Medicaid population in South Carolina, this is one of the most non-compliant, you know, populations as far as you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. I can bring a diabetes educator to an individual's home to talk to them about how to take their insulin, about what kind of a diet to
eat,
Yep. Talk to them about exercise. That doesn't mean they're going to do it.
But it's still up to them. Aaron, we've got your perspective, and I appreciate it. Howard Dean, you hear there from Omaha support for public option, and more than that, from Aaron, real skepticism about whether this will bring the efficiencies, the cost control that have been described.
Well, yeah, and they're both right in some ways. First of all, the public option is really easy to understand because, and Aaron has it understood, it is essentially like allowing people under 65 to get into Medicare. It's incredibly easy to understand. Lynn Nichols is also right in terms of the incentives that you're going to build in to change the way we practice medicine is the really important part. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of that in the bill. There's some. In fact, the most – now, let me just – talk about why the public option is important, though. Mm-hmm. First of all, the Blue Dogs improved the Senate bill, I mean the House bill dramatically, by saying you could not use Medicare rates so that that problem will be dealt with. Aaron's absolutely right. In South Carolina and every place else, Medicare doesn't pay enough for primary care providers to stay in business and take Medicare patients. So, but you can fix that, and the Blue Dogs, in fact, did in their compromise in the House, which made it, I think, a better bill. Mm. History is very much against the idea that you can do this with a public, out of public option. Massachusetts, which has probably the most far-reaching healthcare experiment of any state, essentially has driven their uninsured rate down to 2.5%. That is extraordinary. That's in league with many European countries. But they're broke. And their program is broke. And part of it's because of the recession, but part of it's because there's no cost controls. Last month, there was a panel that the governor had put together to try to figure out how to deal with the cost problem. They voted, including doctors and hospitals, to abandon fee-for-service medicine. Now, that is a big improvement. Fee-for-service medicine encourages us doctors, to do more things to patients, many of which are not necessary. That's the kind of incentive that we need, but you're not going to get that if you don't have a public option.
Why would a public option maybe be a crowbar or leverage to what? You're talking about national abandonment of fee-for-service?
I don't think it'll happen nationally. I think it'll happen state by state, but it's happening now in South Carolina. If you're in managed care, that's not fee-for-service medicine. Managed care was great until the private sector took it over and went public and went to the stockholders, and this is where the caller from Omaha is right. When the private sector gets involved, they have divided loyalties. They have a loyalty to their shareholders, and they have a loyalty to their patients. But their loyalty to their shareholders overcomes the loyalty to their patients. These are profit-making companies, and the profit is made at the expense of the patients. You can only make the profit one way. You give less health care for the dollars you're taking in, and that's what happens. So, look, I think if people like their employer-based system, they ought to be able to keep that. But you are not going to control costs when you have a system that sets patients against shareholders, because the shareholders are always going to win that fight. And at least the public option gives people a chance who don't want to be in the system we have now to do something very different. And if without that chance, I think all these reforms are marginal, minimal, around the edges, and they're not really going to control costs at all.
Let me get a call from Nashua, New Hampshire, and Pramod. Pramod, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually an entrepreneur, and I've seen my healthcare costs go up from $650 a month in 2006 to almost $1,400 a month now. Mm. So my basic question was, I'm sure all entrepreneurs are really going to support the public option. Why hasn't the Democratic Party done anything about mobilizing the entrepreneurs? Why isn't there like a simple FAQ site to get rid of all these misconceptions that people have?
Pramod, let me ask you, you're an entrepreneur. At town halls, the objection that gets raised is that, among the objections, is that it's unfair for a government insurance program, public option, to compete with private insurance. You're an entrepreneur. Do you see some unfairness there in the market that way?
No, I don't. I mean, if the insurance companies are not able to compete with a government option, which is highly bureaucratic, they obviously can't compete with someone who's efficient. So, I mean, I really don't see any problem, in a capitalistic problem there at all.
Let me add something about this, because this is part of the healthcare reform bill that nobody ever talks about. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your payroll is, a caller from New Hampshire, mm-hmm. but if it's under $500,000 because of the Blue Dogs amendments, you have no further responsibility to give health insurance to any of your employees. I think that's great. We don't do anything for small business in this country. Both parties talk about it a lot, and not much is done. Huge tax breaks for big businesses, but not so many for small business. If we could, I'd go higher. If you could have, and the Senate bill says 25 employees or less, Chris Dodd's bill, I would say that if your payroll is less than $1 million, if you have fewer than 50 employees, I think you ought to be out of the health insurance business if you choose to be.
And where are those employees supposed to get their insurance?
Those employees are taken care of in the House bill and in the Senate bill by a combination of government subsidy, and they can take that subsidy based on their income and choose either private insurance or public insurance. That makes a lot of sense. And that 80% of all the new jobs in America are created by small businesses, not big businesses, small businesses. And we desperately need new jobs right now. What a boost to the economy it would be if we could pass this bill.
Len Nichols, if there's no public option, is there enough capacity and the right price structure to pick up all those uninsured people? Or are we still going to be left with, you know, whatever it may be, 40, 50 million, I don't know, some millions uninsured in this country with it?
Well, that's a great question, Tom, and I think there is a lot of confusion out there for lots of reasons, some of which is manufactured, as Governor Dean mentioned at the beginning. But I would say we need to keep in mind where there are many pieces of this proposal that indeed is taking shape, and one of the important ones is making a new marketplace for people who don't have good options now. That new marketplace should function like the federal employees plan or like big state employee plans do all over the country. A lot of incentive to compete, and the whole thing about, and they have lots of choice, more choice than most large firm workers, frankly, because the governments are often the largest firm in a given state. But the point is, regulation and changing the rules of the marketplace are really what's going to make options available and make people feel better about the choices they have. Once you say you have to sell to all comers, you cannot discriminate based on health, you cannot charge me more because I have a family history of heart disease, even though I'm perfectly healthy right now, you cannot charge me more because I may have had cancer. That is outlawed. Then what you do is you stop the profitability of making money by segmenting the population into healthy and sick, and you make it so that they'll only be able to make money by helping us find value in the healthcare system. That's what group health does. That's what Kaiser Permanente does. That's what Intermountain Healthcare does. That's what Virginia Mason does. It's what good systems do all over the country.
Why do you see the Obama White House wavering on the public option? Do you think the votes are not there for it? Do you think if it stays in, we're not going to get a package?
I think we're talking on August 17th or whatever, and the votes are going to happen in September and October. I think we're a long way from final litmus tests. What I do think is there's a lot of creative work exploring alternative ways to hold Republicans in this bill because it would be better. I think we all agree if Republicans did support it. It certainly seems to be the case that rank and file and leadership Republican parties against compromise because they do want to damage President Obama's agenda. I understand that. But Chuck Grassley, Olympia Snow and a number of others are working very hard. I think there's a chance we can hold them, and I think there are creative ways to maybe get a bill out of the Finance Committee that won't be the final bill, but a bill that will advance a debate. The most important vote is in October when we get the final bill.
Are you afraid of coming out with a bag that's half empty or so empty that it's worse than no passage?
Tom, I'm afraid of us losing sight of what this is about. What this is about is making sure that all Americans, and I stress the word all, have access to affordable health care and that health care be sustainable over time. That's the most important thing. We are not as interested and clever as we may think we are. We are not going to write a perfect bill. That's not possible. What we can do, though, is make a commitment to making sure every American has access and to making sure we are agreed that we're going to make the system sustainable for all of us. We get those two things, we can fix this over time. It's a work in progress. It always will be. I want us not to lose sight of those goals.
Len Nichols, who was there in the failed Clinton drive, looking now at the Obama drive, director of the Health Policy Program at the New America Foundation, and joining us today from Washington, D.C. Len, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about health care reform and the public option for government-run insurance. Apparently, in trouble. Comments over the weekend from the president, from the Health and Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, that looked like some backpedaling and opening to let the public option go. Howard Dean is with us, former governor of Vermont, presidential contender, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, a big voice in healthcare circles, a physician, of course, himself. We'll hear in just a moment from a conservative economist who says no thanks. But Howard Dean, I wanted to ask you first, and you hear there again Len Nichols as he goes saying, you know, take something. Don't let this go down in defeat. 15 years in the wilderness after the Clinton failure. Don't let that happen this time. Compromise, maybe get some Republican votes, and we'll fix it as we go. What do you say, Howard Dean?
Well, look, ideally, anything is better than nothing, except that anything isn't better than nothing. The problem is, A, the Republicans have made it very clear. Charles Grassley made it very clear yesterday he wasn't going to vote for any Democratic bill. Secondly, if you put $60 billion a year, which is the cost of this bill, scored in the House anyway, into the insurance industry, what makes you think possibly that you're ever going to have any money left to reform the system later on when you need to do the stuff that Len says can be done later? I went through the Clinton stuff too, and I think a lot of the problem that Democrats have in general is that we think that the Republicans are our friends. They're not. They made it very clear what their agenda is. Having two, even if we could get two or three Republicans on board, which I don't think is possible. Their principal agenda of their party is to take down President Obama, not to pass health care reform. Why not do it right? We have the power to do that. We have this enormous majority. What is the point of having an enormous majority if you can't get anything done? Do you think Franklin Roosevelt would have compromised with the Republicans on Social Security? No. And he went on and was one of the few presidents to gain seats in the off-year election. So I hate to see the Democratic Party backslide into this appeasement routine. It's fine to work with Republicans when they want to work with you, but these Republicans don't want to work with us, and we ought to pass the bill the way it ought to be passed, which is with a public option. And let's just say one other thing. Mm. There are about 86 people, roughly, who signed on to a single payer in the House. And look, whether you like a single payer or you don't, it is a lot more efficient than, and their costs are much lower than ours. Now, you can debate about that and so forth and so on, but that's the fact is true. That's the fact. So those guys were just put in the corner and told to get out of the way. This is the compromise. It's the compromise between what 86 members of the House wanted in the Democratic Party and the present system. And I think that's a reasonable compromise, having the public option, letting the American people choose whether they want to get into a single payer like Medicare or stay in the private sector. Let them make that choice. But if you just pass something that really doesn't do anything except give health insurance companies more money, I really don't think that's going to improve the situation at all, and it's certainly not worth giving us, you know, charging $60 billion a year to our kids' credit cards.
Do it right, do it now, says Howard Dean. Of course, what's right is the debate. Gail Wilensky joins us now from Washington, economist, senior fellow at Project Hope. She recently served as commissioner on the World Health Organization's Commission on Social Determinants of Health, headed up Medicare 91, 92, kind of a conservative economist looking at healthcare. Gail, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be here.
You're not for the public option. Why not?
Because I think you can solve most of the problems that the public option is supposed to solve with other strategies. You can make sure that insurance companies, quote-unquote, are held honest by regulation, not allowing for pre-existing conditions to exclude people, rate bans, the kinds of issues that Howard Dean raised earlier that some states including his Vermont and Massachusetts, have already taken on. So there are other ways, and some very serious regulation changes are being proposed in the various health reform bills. The one thing that you need a public plan to do is to push through below market rates of reimbursement like Medicare. Medicare has resulted in 7% negative margins for hospitals. They shifted to private payers. And pays on average 80% of what private insurance pays for physicians. The problem is Medicare has lower prices for each individual service, actually has not done very well in terms of slowing spending, and has been really behind the curve in terms of moving to reform the delivery system, making sure that we have incentives for physicians to work together and provide good clinical outcomes and provide preventive care. Medicare is actually last in line in terms of those kinds of reforms. So I think there are some changes that we need to have. The co-op notion is an okay idea. if you're worried that there aren't enough choices in some markets, that's really what it can do. But we need to be careful about bringing in this public program. Hear about the federal employees plan all the time, the plan that members of Congress have.
Right.
It doesn't have a public plan option. It's a series of private insurance offerings, some very loosely organized, some tightly organized, includes the Kaisers and some of the integrated delivery systems, not-for-profit plans, for-profit plans. People can have their choice. It's really a good model, and it doesn't have a Medicare option with the government using the force that only government can use to drive below market reimbursement rates. That does destabilize the market.
Well, let me ask you a couple of things. First of all, at the town hall meetings, the conservative pushback has been essentially this is not fair to private insurance, not fair to the private market in health care. Is that your primary concern here? I mean, is this about fairness to the market and to private enterprise, or is this about health care?
It is about what will have stable offerings in the future. What we see in Medicare is what Medicare underpays is pushed over to the private plans so that they are pushed to pay more. That's not very helpful. That's not how you drive delivery reform. That's what we see happening in Medicare. If you give a public plan the same kind of power of government to push through under market rates of reimbursement, that is exactly what will happen. That destabilizes insurance. There are a lot of things we need to change, destabilizing the offerings that people have available so that if they like what they have, they can continue it is not a good idea. And you can solve the legitimate problems that are being raised through other means. I also disagree with the notion that there aren't any Republicans that want to provide health care reform support. It is clearly the position of the majority that this is not something they want to support. You have people like Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins, but also people like Mike Enzi, who are working very hard, and Charles Grassley, who has had a lot of time spent trying to come up with strategies that at least some Republicans on the Finance Committee and on the Health Committee will be able to support. And I think if it's possible, it is good to have them. But frankly, the Democrats need to make sure they keep all of their members on board. They have some conservative members who are uneasy as well.
Right, right. You've got a lot more faith on the GOP side of that than Howard Dean does. Howard Dean,
some of them.
Yeah. Howard Dean, how about it? You hear Gail saying, look, government involvement pushes us to undermarket rates that destabilizes the health care market and private insurance and all the rest. And
well, let me just say, first of all, it's hard to know just exactly where to start. Okay, under market rates, I would agree that on the primary care side, that it's, you know, it's a real problem, and I think the Blue Dogs have addressed that in the House. But let's remember, market rates are a creation of a system that is not a free market system. And I don't think anybody could claim that healthcare was a free market system. It's not like going to buy a car where you go around different models. If you can't afford it, you don't get it. Basically, the retailer sets the price, not the consumer, and then we both send the bill to a third party. So,
everybody agrees we can't afford it overall.
Well, yeah, but the system marches on. So, my question to you is: if you're concerned about the public option, do you think that we should get rid of Medicare?
Gail?
No, I don't think we should get rid of Medicare. That's 85% of the coverage of seniors. I don't think we need it. In the under 65 rate, the federal employees health care model is a really good model, and it doesn't have a Medicare-like part in it.
But we've got 50 million people uninsured and costs out of control in that under 65.
And I think Medicare is not the answer to reforming the delivery system. Howard Dean knows that. Medicare is a la carte fee-for-service medicine. People don't have any the physicians don't have incentives to provide preventive care. They don't have the incentives to work together and try to produce the best clinical outcomes. Medicare is hardly the model in terms of reforming the delivery system that we want for this country.
I would say that
Governor Dean,
there's a middle road here. I would agree with some of that. Now, DRGs, in fact, are a model.
DRGs?
Yes. Diagnostic-related reimbursement, basically. is a way of reimbursing hospitals where they don't get fee-for-service for everything. They get basically reimbursed by the disease. Now, it's not a perfect system, but it is a way of kind of avoiding this. You know, the more you do, the more you get paid. I will say this, and this is, I think, again, an argument for the public option, because it's for a hybrid system. It is true that a lot of innovation takes place in the private sector. It does not take place by insurance companies, by and large, except they find innovative ways to kick people off health insurance. You know, there actually are laws today that prevent you from kicking people off their health insurance. But there was testimony in Congress a month or so ago that the three largest insurance companies find ways to put fine print in their contracts, give their employees bonuses to get rid of people who get sick once they have insurance. And that resulted in 20,000 people losing their insurance who were already insured when they got sick, where they flow through to the bottom line of these three largest insurance companies, $300 million. That is why you need a public option. No amount of regulation can stop that kind of behavior. But let me just say this. Mm. In big group markets, if you go to work for GE or IBM or Microsoft, that's where the innovation in both the delivery finance system is and in the switching of our model of healthcare from an illness model to a wellness model. Those big corporations take all the crummy food out of their cafeteria and put good stuff in. They make health clubs available. Some of them even take attendance to see if you show up there. I mean, one of the things nobody ever talks about in healthcare reform is the individual responsibility to take care of themselves. And I would agree with you that Medicare doesn't do anything for that. Neither does the private insurance companies. But big employer-based insurance schemes, usually self-insured, not through insurance companies. They administer them, but they don't insure them. That is where the innovation is going in terms of wellness.
Howard Dean, let me get a call from your Vermont neck of the woods. John, Richmond, Vermont, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Dean.
Hi.
I guess listening to all the callers, it seems that it would be very difficult to debate point by point because I'm not an expert. I think what I'd like to contribute is the lack of a context for all this. It's very hard to evaluate going forward whether a particular piece of legislation or part of any proposed legislation would work or not, because unless you're in the industry, you don't know the efficacy of any particular protocol. What is, from my mm-hmm. perspective, is lacking is the ability to say, okay, here's the goal. The goal is savings and coverage for, you know, all, whatever.
That's pretty much what the president has said, isn't it, John?
Right, but don't you have to develop a consensus? You have to get some folks to follow in order to do that. What the emphasis has been on so far has been speed. We've got to get this done before the August recess. There's no model, whether it's innovative or copying some other countries, to say, here's the strengths, here's the weaknesses. Do you buy in? Because, frankly, everybody's waiting on the sidelines to say, if I don't get a direct benefit, what's the indirect benefit? And can they prove the indirect benefit?
Yeah.
Again, to provide context, we're already doing that in the financial sector. We've spent, $1 or $2 trillion with an outcome that is somewhere in the future, and there's no guarantee.
John, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Howard Dean, many people are willing to give context. I mean, Karl Rove, for heaven's sakes, he wrote, if Democrats get this public option insurance program, America's on the way to becoming a European-style welfare state. You know, the details are hard to understand. Just take this big message, America. So let's just pull the covers off and go straight to that.
Well, the irony of that is that's almost exactly what Ronald Reagan said about Medicare when he was hired as the pitch man to try to beat back Medicare. There's a lot of alarmism like that. Here's the problem. My argument, and Gail can disagree with me, and I suspect she will, is that I'm actually not an ideologue about this. If I were, I'd be in favor of a single payer. But I'm not. I want to use what works. But I look at history to be the model. The history of the private and health insurance market, if shareholder-owned, is awful, both from a consumer's point of view and from a physician's point of view. The history of Medicare, it is true, Medicare costs have gone up at 2 points above the rate of inflation, but private insurance has gone up at 2.5 times the rate of inflation over 30 years. And there's some arguments, well, yes, there's cost shifting. I agree with all that stuff. So it seems to me that the president's plan, which allows individual consumers to make their own choices between a public option and a private option, makes the most sense. I've told people who are both disagree with me on both the left and the right is Why not let the American consumers make their own choices? If you do that, they'll decide how much reform they want and how fast they want it, and how much reform is right for them and right for their families. That is why I like the president's plan. The caller from Richmond is right. Nobody can look. Even Gail is a very well-respected person who did a terrific job and when she was in government. And you know, even we who know a lot about this subject have fundamental disagreements about what might happen. So why not let the marketplace work? Have a private section and a private option, which we've had for a long time. Have them a public option. Let the American people make their own choices.
That sounds pretty straightforward. Gail, what do you say?
The problem is that the public plan will shift costs to the private plan, which makes it hard to continue those offerings.
But the Blue Dogs have already fixed that in the House bill.
But that can be taken out with one line. They put it in now when government needs money. What they turn to, we see this in Medicare, we're seeing it right now by the Obama administration. When they need money, they reduce the reimbursements.
But see, you're arguing about the future problems. If this will happen, that will happen. We'll have a socialist government. We'll be like Europeans, as Reagan said. We'll lose our freedom. That's what if. I'm pointing at history. We know what doesn't work. What doesn't work is the unfettered private market. That we know. We don't know about all this conjecture that you're raising.
We're not talking about the unfettered private market. We're talking about a real regulated insurance system. We're talking about reforms like the federal employee health care plan. When there are many options, there are private sector options, there are not-for-profits, there are for-profits, they're tightly managed, they're loosely managed. That is the kind of choices the American public should have. You put in a public option, it will destabilize all those other choices.
I think the public should be able to make up their own mind about this. I really do.
And there's the argument in all we can give it in an hour, but it's hot, and we'll follow where it goes. Howard Dean, it's been great having you this hour.
Thanks
you very much for joining
on.
Us. You bet. Thank you for being here. And Gail Walensky in Washington, thanks for joining us, Gail.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.